It's Power Hour, LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
Happy hump day. Jackson Howard has entered the transfer portal, and it's no laughing matter because LSU needs as much help as they possibly can defensively. Or do they? Is this addition by subtraction? Well, I'll tell you this. When Jackson Howard came out of Minnesota, I want you to keep that in mind. Minnesota, I had an okay grade on him. You know, he kind of began to slide a little bit in the recruiting rankings. He started things off as a top 100 guy. And if you look really closely, all four of the services had him outside the 120 range. And On3 had him at 250. His consensus ranking ended up being about 120. And on Patreon, we grade every single high school recruit on our own grading scale. And I had him around a higher tier 3-star average prospect grade. I think he's playing the wrong position. I do feel he is better served on offense as a tight end. But, you know, his dad played in the NFL, played for the Minnesota Vikings, and he was a defensive player. And Jackson Howard is looking to follow in his footsteps. And last year he redshirted. He played exactly 5 games. He was used as a special teamer early in the year, and he was a good special teamer. And probably midway through the season, LSU said, look, we're going to give you the opportunity to redshirt. And then he played in the bowl game, didn't really do a whole lot in the bowl game, and didn't really do a whole lot this year. He played some in the Texas A&M game as well. So for me, I wasn't as high on him as the recruiting rankings were, and that doesn't mean he's going to be a great player. Obviously, we all miss on our projections and our predictions and whatnot, and I liked him. He played hard. He did things, by all accounts, the right way, but it didn't work out. LSU's defensive end room is extremely deep, and something that happened to Jackson Howard were actually quite a few things. You know, I am a huge Jamar Cain fan. I think Jamar Cain was a really good defensive line coach when he was here at LSU. And I believe Jamar Cain was one of his primary recruiters, someone that he had a really good relationship with. He left because there was a shakeup on the defensive line with a new Jack linebackers coach coming in John Jancic. And then Cain left. And, well, this next year we had a brand new defensive line coach. So it just really never meshed for him. And I think it's one of these situations where it is better for both parties involved that they move on. I still think Jackson Howard is a Division I Power 5 defensive end. I still think he is going to be good. But I didn't ever really see that next level special bend that you see with a lot of the elite edge players. So we would have been better off with him than without him, but it's also a situation where he can move closer to home and maybe find a defensive end room that's not as deep as our defensive end room. And also the style of play our defensive ends will play next year will be kind of different with Kevin Peoples now being their position coach. So best select to Jackson Howard. I'm a big fan of his, you know, doing research on him. But I want to get into a different topic, and we dive a little bit deeper data-wise. You know, this is a bunch of chicken scratch here. But I released a lot of research here. I know it doesn't look too fancy, but I like to do deep dives on LSU recruiting, right? Not necessarily on if this player was going to go here or there, but what actually works at LSU? Okay, what do we need at LSU, and what should we avoid at LSU? And I think one thing people tend to forget when it comes to LSU recruiting or just sports in general, it's hard to point out who is going to be special. What's even harder, though, is what should you avoid? What are some things as prospects or as players? Is it a personality thing? Is it a body type? Is it a recruiting ranking? Do we tend to fall in love too much with 4-star versus 3-star? There's a lot of different things that I look at. But one trait that I think LSU has figured out, and it's one I believe Brian Kelly will hammer home in the near future, is 23 of the 27 LSU recruits that came in this last recruiting class were either from Louisiana or Texas or a nearby bordering state. Okay, 23 of the 27. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, that means LSU said, we need to really focus in on our region. And Jackson Howard is from Minnesota. So on Patreon, all the data is there, but I'm just going to give you a little sneak peek of it here so you can go sign up and be a part of our Discord community. 25% of the time, players outside of our framework succeed as LSU high school recruits. One out of every four. And on average, when it comes to recruits, about half of your recruits hit, half of the time. So 25% of the time, when a player who is not from Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, or Louisiana, when we get recruits outside of our framework, they don't work out. Even ones with elite recruiting rankings. Okay? So Jackson Howard was a relatively elite recruit. He was a really good 4-star recruit out of Minnesota. But it's not a part of our framework. Now, transfers are a different thing. Transfers are a more sure thing in theory, right? You know, you have college tape on transfers. You're recruiting an adult when it comes to a transfer. There's more proven data on transfers. Maybe not as high as upside, but you're getting a higher floor player that can contribute and start and give you stuff, right? When it comes to high school recruits, though, if there was something I could recommend to LSU football, stick in your framework, unless it's somebody truly transcendent. Elias Ricks, you should have gone after him. You got him. He gave you good football, and then things turned sour. Bryce Underwood? Yeah, you should go after Bryce Underwood, even though he's all the way up in Michigan. All right? So, outside of that, outside of really special players and high-value positions of need, more often than not, it is smarter to stay within the framework. Now, are there exceptions? Yeah, if you play in California, but your whole family's from Louisiana and you're actually moving back home, it's a little bit different. That's extra context. But I would be very careful recruiting kids outside of the framework. All right. There's only really two positions I would focus on: quarterback and offensive line, because they are the two most valuable resources in high school recruiting. An offensive line, to me, is more valuable than quarterback, because you need five offensive linemen compared to one quarterback on the field. And there's a lot of quarterbacks you can go get in the transfer portal and so on and so on. So, and you could just go bid and get you one elite quarterback. It's hard to bid and put together a really big-time offensive line. And historically, a lot of offensive linemen from wherever have succeeded at LSU. Okay? Ethan Posick, Joseph Barksdale. I think Ethan Galloway is a very interesting player. There's a lot of out of our framework and out of our normal region offensive linemen that have come to LSU and been really good football players. So I would heavily think about going after certain players. Is the juice worth the squeeze? So Bet selected Jackson Howard, and I find his next move to be very interesting. I also think LSU is getting ready to get another commitment for the class of 2025, and I think that announcement will come soon. It was a player that we discussed yesterday. His name is JT Lindsey. He is a running back out of Alexandria. So there you go. And as Pegasus points out, Garrett Dellinger from Michigan. All right. So offensive line, you really got to recruit nationwide because you need a lot of them. And there's not as many of them in the transfer portal. And I have been radicalized to high school football recruiting when it comes to offensive line. Right. Now in the portal era, you could find some guys that can go out there and catch passes. You could find you one quarterback in the portal. You could find defensive pieces and it piece together and work out on the defensive side. Offensive line is always going to be the number one resource to me. And I'm not just saying that because Brian Kelly has turned up our offensive line recruiting to a level it's really never seen before. So there you go. Now, the next thing I'll bring up before we get to some more of your questions, we say hi to Lance. I think this is very, very, very critical. All right. Tyler, our first commenter of the evening. Good to see you. Jordan, what's up? Hakeem? Pressure? Let's have an honest conversation here. And I mean, very honest conversation about the spring game. All right. And before we do that, one more thing on recruiting. This happened last year with the tight end by the name of Tavian Galloway. All right. And Tavian Galloway was the most pro LSU recruit I've ever seen. And not pro as in professional, but when it comes to tweeting out LSU, when it comes to recruiting other LSU kids, he decommitted. And LSU fans went after him. He was like, "How can you be so pro LSU?" And then all of a sudden you're not rocking with this anymore. Understand that there are a lot of factors in every kid's decision when it comes to going to LSU or any school. And sometimes the decisions are mutual. Sometimes the kid realizes he doesn't really see a future at LSU and he has a better fit elsewhere. And sometimes from LSU's side of things, they'll go to a recruit and say, "Look, you're not really a fit with us anymore." And I know that's not the point of being a student athlete, but this is how it's always been. And it's even more so now with the business nature of college football. Now that we have agents and now that we're starting to hear about what actual specific recruits are getting. I think, honestly, Deion Sanders, what he did last year was revolutionary in many ways. And he openly talked about cutting kids. And it cut people the wrong way. All right? Y'all, especially now, you should never, ever chastise a kid for leaving. Especially if the kid is a backup, all right? You don't know if he wanted to stay at LSU. You don't know if it was his decision. You don't know if the kid, especially if he is further away from home, is homesick, dealing with the mental stress of being so far away. There's a lot of different factors. And this didn't happen necessarily with Jackson Howard today, but it's just a stern warning for the future of this sport that a lot of kids are going to be more mobile. Sometimes it is for more money. Sometimes it is a starter who's trying to squeeze more money out of schools. But if a backup player is deciding to go, or if there's a coaching change or whatever, understand their decision and move on. And I hate to, you know, explain to people how they should act, but understand that a lot of times when it comes to rosters, LSU is hovering around that 85 number. Sometimes you gotta make numbers work. You do. So you do you, but keep that in mind. Now, I want to talk about the spring game. With every single spring game, you have to be skeptical with what you see. Now, I should still be going to the spring game. I did have something pop up as far as some arrangements for me to do the post-game show. So it looks like I'm still going. I'll have a decision, a full decision by tomorrow, but 80% I'm still going, but it might, the rug might get pulled out from under me, if that makes sense. So I'll have an announcement tomorrow on it, but I still should be going. I want to sit with you at the game. But I want to make it, I want to make it clear that something could change. So follow on Power Hour LSU and so on and so on. Okay. What I want people to realize about the spring game is every single year there is a player who has a spectacular spring game and does nothing the following year. It happens every single year. Some of it is just pure math. All right. So let's take Jordan's player here, LaTerrence Welch. Okay, let's take LaTerrence Welch, for instance. He had an awesome spring game last year. He did. He made a great play on Chris Hilton, and he just dominated the spring game. And then the coaches never played him. And then they put him in versus Ole Miss. And he had an amazing play versus Ole Miss. And then after that, just didn't work out after that. All right? It's every single year. The year before, it was John Terry Kirkland. And John Terry turned out to be a very good role player for LSU, but he had 16 catches in a spring game. All right, judging by that, you would have thought he would be one of the best receivers on the team. And he, once again, he was a good role player, high football IQ, quarterback for us in the bowl game, but it didn't work out. Love John Trey, but he didn't become a superstar. Richard Murphy many years ago had one of the best spring games by any LSU running back. Richard Murphy, like John Trey Kirkland, was a very good player. He was a number 18. But he never broke out. I don't think he ever had a 400-yard season. So you always have some spring game all-stars. And part of that is just because instead of 11 LSU football players being on the field at the same time, there are 22 LSU football players on the field at the same time. And it's not the full roster, as many kids are coming in the fall. And it's a vanilla playbook. But there are some small takeaways you could take from spring games, right? It's a small piece of the puzzle, and you should never take too much away from any of it. Okay? You know, I've already done spring game film studies on the SEC channel, and Auburn's was painfully vanilla, their playbook. I expect Brian Kelly to do the same. And obviously the big spring game storyline going into Saturday has to be Ricky Collins versus AJ Swan. He has to be. All right. So, you know, I want you to keep that in mind when it comes to LSU spring games. It could be very, it's free to go. Last two spring games, Joe Burrow was there. So, you never know who's going to show up. Joe Burrow, Angel Reese, Ja'Marr Chase were all there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, there. So there you go. Now,
as we always do, about 20 minutes in, this content for you is free. There's paid content we do on Patreon. You can also go to powerhourlsu.com/merch and get your merch. But even more importantly, you could super chat right now. I truly believe you support what we're doing.
I go straight to your topic. And we can even have a one-on-one conversation after the stream is over. So please fire them on in at powerhourlsu. On Twitter is where you can follow me on social media. And there you go. Jordan, thank you so much for the super. You get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. Venmo's, Cash Apps, always appreciated. More appreciated. Now, because Jordan stepped up right on cue, I do want to go back to, you know, the opening thing that we talked about, which is the out-of-state recruiting. I always ask myself this question. If I was an LSU coach, how would I go about recruiting? I would start with one big question. Is the kid I'm recruiting someone I can envision being a needle mover? Now, not every kid that you scout or you recruit will be a needle mover by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, you can look at a kid and be like, okay, this guy could be a good football player for us. He might not be special. But when it comes to an out-of-state guy, really ask yourself, is this kid someone I could see being a double-digit sack guy? Someone I could see forcing slide protections his direction almost every single time. And that wasn't a smooth description of slide protections, but you get what I'm saying. Is this guy a true difference maker? Because I truly do believe when it comes to solid college football players, outside of the offensive line position, you could find mostly solid to starter level players in the transfer portal or at a high school in our framework. Mostly Louisiana, Texas, but Mississippi, and so on.
Find players in your blueprint to be the backbone of your program.
All right. And I'm telling you right now, especially on defense, try to stay in the framework. There have been an alarmingly high number of players that we have recruited outside of the Southeastern region here on the defensive side that were blue chip, can't miss recruits, and they gave you nothing. Okay? Gave you nothing. And, you know, nothing is always a strong way to describe it, but, you know, that's a valuable resource. That's a valuable roster spot. That's a valuable bit of NIL you're spending to get a kid from wherever to come to your school. Ask yourself that question. Now, I will also tell you this. It's hard to be a special college football player. It's also hard to be a difference maker. All right. I do feel that in this recruiting class, you know, my first batch of ratings for, I'm still going through huddle tapes, backgrounds, all that stuff to put together my final grade. And what I can tell you is Deshaun McBride, it's going to be tough for him to not be my number one guy. It's going to be really, really, really tough. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him at the spring game. And that's why I kind of want to go in person just to see it. I've not seen him in the flesh yet. But I'm excited. I'm really, really, really excited to get to see him. Number 10. All right, keep that in mind. Number 10. Let's go to Jordan's Super Chat. Local kid waited his turn, position of need. Then LaTerrence Welch transferred. Can we infer anything? Yeah, I know you always liked him. He just he didn't ever make really any plays. He made one really big play versus Ole Miss. That was on the first drive of the game, and it was a pass breakup. And it was a really special pass breakup. When it comes to ball skills, he was really good. He was really good at locating the football and making a play. I just think, you know, he had a huge injury his senior year of high school, and it was a lower body injury. And I just don't think he ever really got that high in athleticism back. You know, he's a longer corner. That's the build of what you want your corners to look like. He was honestly built like a lot of traditional Corey Raymond corners. And obviously Corey just came in after Welch, you know, transferred. I honestly think it was that. He struggled tackling guys in the open field on special teams and on defense. So I think that's what happened with him. You know, you never really know, but I wish him the best. I believe he went to Arizona State. And we'll see. We'll see. This is my strongest take to Cole's comment. When it comes to the SEC or versus a Big Ten, I do think there is, you know, a drop off from the SEC or from the Big Ten, or no, from the SEC to the Big Ten. I just don't think it's massive. I really, really, really don't. You know, if you were to go program by program, yeah, SEC's got more draft picks. Yeah, we're getting Texas and Oklahoma to join our conference. But, you know, the Big Ten plays good football. They really, really, really do. Now, what I would find to be interesting, though, is there have been a lot of transfers that have had verified success and playing time at other Power 5 schools, and they've transferred here and been duds. So there might be something to it. I just don't think it's like some gigantic drop-off from the Big Ten to the from the SEC to the Big Ten. But I might be wrong about that. A lot of recruits that have come from the other conferences and have had and were successful, they just didn't work out here. Mike Jones, the linebacker from last year, Omar Spates, Mason Lunsford, some of that's injury related. All three of those guys had their injury issues. And maybe that's the case. But, you know, it's always tough. You know, it's individual by individual player. I mean, Jerick Bernard Converse was a fantastic player for us. Mekhi Gardner was a really good football player for us. You know, we've had transfers from Marshall. I don't know. I don't know. But ultimately, the roster is overflowed with players right now. It is. We say hi to Pick Six. We say hi to Isaiah. We say hi to Cliff. Carvis said Howard wasn't as big as Womack. True. Womack is a unit. We say hi to Skipper, Van, Hakeem. Good to see each and every one of you. Tony the Tiger's in here as well. Tony, show yourself. And, yeah. You know, especially in the offseason, we drift off into other sports. I don't know how much baseball I'm going to chat tonight. There is no midweek game. They don't play until this weekend versus Tennessee. So I'll mostly stick with football. Nothing really women's basketball related that's come out that I know of in the past 24 hours, but we'll see. All right. Cole says top of the Big Ten is pretty competitive, but the drop-off is pretty sharp. Okay, so maybe still, you know, it's obviously the elites of the Big Ten is Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, now USC. And then elites of the SEC. It's Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Texas, Ole Miss, Tennessee. So yeah, maybe there is a bigger drop off. I don't know. I think most of the national media would say there's not really a big drop off. But when you had Texas and Oklahoma compared to USC and UCLA, when it comes to football, yeah, I would say so. There was one football related thing that I tweeted out a little bit earlier today about the Alabama game. I truly do believe the Alabama game will never be the same. I truly do believe it. Some of it is the Nick Saban part of it. Some of it is also, it's Alabama, right? I hate to beat the dead horse about this. With the playoff expanding to 12 teams, individual games just lose that bit of value. You know, that 2022 LSU versus Alabama game is something that is ingrained in my soul. The 2012 LSU-Alabama game. I tweeted out a clip of J.C. Copeland with the deep run down the sideline. The stadium erupted. It was a 14-10 game heading into the fourth quarter. It's a weird, weird, weird game. And as Cliff points out, there's no more SEC East and SEC West. It doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't. Cole says Missouri beat OSU in the bowl. True.
But
what? Ohio State didn't have their quarterback. Marvin Harrison didn't play in the game either. Defensively, Ohio State was actually pretty elite in that game. What, 14-3 was the final score? Does Marvin Harrison move the needle that much in that game? I would say so. I mean, he won the Biletnikoff. Shouldn't have, but he did. Here's Blyberg. Here's the thing I don't get. DeCorian Moore gone yet. All right.
This is a very unfun part of the job. It honestly is. All right. I think Blyberg is commented before, but let me just vent here for a second. One thing I never quite understand when it comes to college football recruiting or just college football fandom. Why do so many people get up in arms about a decision that has not been made yet? I can understand being excited about a commitment, but I will never go on someone else's like page or some opposing team's page and just badger them about, hey, is so-and-so about to flip here? All right. Like, for instance, like Harold Perkins is my favorite LSU recruit I've ever evaluated. Highest grade I've ever given an LSU recruit. And I've been doing my own grading system for a while now, but he's still the best. And then I got word that he was still very interested in going to LSU, even after he committed to Texas A&M. I didn't go to Texas A&M pages and say, hey, is Harold Perkins flipped yet? Is Harold Perkins flipped yet? And Blyberg might be an LSU fan. I don't know. But right now, I really, DeCorian Moore's committed to LSU. I don't care that some random reporter, I just don't care that some random reporter says he's going to go to Texas, or he might go to Ohio State, or he might go to Oregon. If he does, I would much rather him go to Ohio State or Oregon because they won't be in our conference.
But it's just something I don't worry about. And unless I get like someone that I truly trust telling me that DeCorian Moore is getting ready to flip. And look, he's a transcendent prospect. He is one of the best high school recruits we have ever landed. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to work out. And if I was DeCorian Moore, I would definitely be keeping my options open and hearing out, you know, wherever I could potentially go and feel what's best for me. And I would tell him that right now, that I would much rather you play at LSU, but do what's best for you. Do what makes you happy. Okay. I think football of all sports is a sport that you can't play unless you're truly happy somewhere. If you're not happy at LSU or if you're not happy at Cal State Fullerton or wherever, don't play. Go somewhere where you feel like you're going to be happy. I don't want you to be in mental anguish. But like
from this point forward, this topic is going to get brought up until he actually signs. All right. Now, what I would tell you about DeCorian Moore is Texas, to me, will always be the toughest school because of proximity and also because Texas has, you know, good NIL funding, and he's got teammates that have committed to Texas. All right, obviously, he's got a teammate in Caden Durham going to LSU. He's got a teammate in Colin Simmons at Texas. Oregon is stacked. It's a very good program. They got deep NIL buckets of money. And then Ohio State, along with LSU, is producing wide receivers at a better rate than anyone else. So, look, wherever DeCorian decides to go, I wish him nothing but the best. But at this point, he's committed to LSU. At this point, we know he's got a good relationship with the five-star quarterback that is committed to LSU and Bryce Underwood. And we also know LSU is in relatively close proximity to Dallas. So I think he's going to pick LSU. I do. All right. Now, if he is given a colossal amount of money, because he does look like Odell Beckham Jr. on tape, and he does idolize Odell Beckham Jr., then he needs to do what he feels is best for him. But he is truly a special wide receiver prospect. And I think he's going to pick LSU. I do. I really, really, really do. We say hi to J-Red, T-O-V, Mick, Tony the Tiger, lots of PHL goats. Can't stand OSU. You would prefer him go to OSU instead of Texas, though. Fall camp is going to be huge for Brian Kelly. Yeah, I think it's going to be huge for everyone. You know, at this point, I've heard so many different things about the portal being especially lit. You see a lot of national reporters say the portal is going to be lit, and it gets a lot of retweets and stuff because it's vague. It doesn't provide any specificity, and that could be, you know, for any team. But at this point, I'm going to be real. I think it will be very active for LSU. I do. I really, really, really do. And the reason why I think the spring portal could be a little bit more exodus than potential incoming players is, well, We're overweight. We got 88. I don't think it's exactly 88, but we're over the 85 scholarship limit. All right. So you could see some more roster thinning. And I definitely see it coming. I really do. And what I would say, as far as an LSU recruit, and you know, there's players that reach out to me from time to time. If you are one of those guys, if there's a mutual parting of ways or a processing or whatever, I would say this to any recruit. All right. Go be you somewhere else. Put that chip on your shoulder and prove yourself somewhere else. Go somewhere where you know for sure you're going to play.
and be you. You know, your first stop never defined you. It doesn't. It doesn't. Po' Boy says we got some much needed true freshmen missing in the spring. Yeah, obviously Dominic McKinley's one of those guys. Tre'Davious Green is another one of those guys, because they're five-star recruits, but they're also, you know, players that could provide some good positional depth. Obviously McKinley, you know, going into this year one is probably going to be a more valuable asset than Green. But you know, there's a lot. There really, really is a lot. Caden Durham, though, is the guy. That's the guy. When I've spoken to recruits, they say Caden Durham is a guy to look out for, that they are truly, truly amazed by. And he's going through his final, you know, track and field years. And even though he's not as fast as Devon Achane, he reminds me a good bit of him, right? So if that's who he is, then we truly got somebody breathtakingly special, okay? But at this point, I really do like him. Now, we are approaching the 1 hour mark. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I will answer as many questions as I possibly can. But if you super chat, I'll keep going all night. I will. All right. Type Y for yes. Type N for no. You are going to the spring game on Saturday. Type Y for yes. Type N for no. LMON says yes. Adam says no. Jared says no. Lance says I wish. I'll have a gazillion percent answer by tomorrow. I did have some things pop up, and I'm trying to work around it. So I will have something for tomorrow. Okay.
You know, I have felt this way about this for a while now.
And I've not brought it up on any live streams. Okay. I've not. But I want to talk a little bit about the NCAA video game. All right. I want to talk a little bit about it. It's coming out in July, is a rumor, mid-July. There's not like a specific date set yet for the NCAA video game. All right. What I would tell you about this game, all right, is I don't know if I'm going to play it or not yet, because it does require me to go get a game system, like a gaming console. All right.
But I saw this trailer. I saw Preston Guy. I think it was Preston Guy that tweeted this out, or it might have been Go Edits. I don't remember who.
And the Go Edits guy said, what will Garrett Nussmeier's ranking be on the game? What will it be? And I was like, okay, I would guess it would be first year starter 82, 83. But then I was like, how accurate are these ratings going to be? I mean, there are a gazillion players in NCAA football. Could there be jealousy in locker rooms over how good a player is? You know, since there are so many players, all right, there tends to be, especially at a position like corner, where you don't really see corners on the field all that much. You know, you really don't know if they're doing their jobs. You know, you don't really see them unless they're thrown to that side of the field. There's often times where I see people make all SEC at corner or something along those lines just because they were a five-star recruit. You know, I had someone bring up that Singletary for Arkansas, I forget his first name, was a good corner for Arkansas last year because he was a five-star recruit that came from the state of Georgia. He was a Georgia Bulldogs recruit to Arkansas, and he was bad last year. He was terrible. And I was like, wait, did you watch any of the Arkansas games? And he was like, yeah, he was good. I was like, no, he wasn't. So I'm also interested to see how accurate the ratings are for, obviously, the players that opted into the game. Let's go to Blanche's Super Chat. I really appreciate you, Blanche. Obviously, wide receiver is a position that I love to talk about. Carter, you define us. I'm flattered. I don't know exactly what that means, but it sounds cool. If CJ doesn't start for LSU, is he still able to redshirt? He has played all 4 years. Just curious. It would be bad for him. I'll tell you this, Blanche. He's not redshirting. All right. I understand your thought process because it's not clear if CJ Daniels will start or get 30 catches or whatever the number may be. But it is a leap of faith that he's taking coming in from Liberty. He probably didn't know this, but there's not an out-of-state wide receiver at LSU that has caught over 40 passes since Terrence Tolliver. Honestly, over 30 passes since Terrence Tolliver. Now, there have been other receivers from outside the state of Louisiana that have had some success. Dee Anderson caught 20 passes. Kadron Boone caught 26 passes 1 year, and then the next year he caught only, like, I think 7 or 8. There's been some other wide receivers that have done something from out of state for LSU, but there's just not been many. And there's also not been many transfer out-of-state receivers that have done something at LSU. There's just not. So, normally, the best receivers in the country are from Louisiana. The only receiver that's won the Heisman in the last few decades is from Louisiana. Now, he did it at Alabama, but still, it's hard to play wide receiver at LSU. It is harder to play wide receiver at LSU than pretty much any school in the country. That's how competitive it is. So it is not a guarantee that he's going to play a lot. But LSU really put their foot forward and went after him. Okay. CJ Daniels was number one in the country in yards per route run. Over Malik Nabers, over Marvin Harrison. Yards per route run is a very sticky stat, which means it can be predictive. It shows you're efficient. You know, my grade for CJ Daniels as a transfer was really good. I mean, I think he was a fine prospect, but there are some holes in this game, and there are some concerns for me. You know, his background is very interesting. He's an epilepsy advocate, right, for people that have epilepsy. And, yeah, I think he's going to be a good player for us. I think he's a good kid, and hopefully it works out. I will also tell you that culturally, going from Liberty to LSU is also a big difference, if you know anything about Liberty. So it should be a very good relationship for LSU and CJ Daniels. Now, let's just say he doesn't play at all, and Blanche is like, maybe he should redshirt. No, because one of the key statistics that NFL teams look for from wide receivers is your age, right? If he has to play one more year of college football, well, that's 1 year less for him to get into the NFL. And NFL teams like younger wide receivers. That's part of the reason why Malik Nabers is an unbelievably highly ranked player for me. Okay. He is young. Very young. He's one of the youngest NFL draft prospects at wide receiver ever. So not only did he dominate the highest level of football you can dominate, he did it at a very young age. So breakout age matters. I do think breakout age, it's been a little bit weird because of the COVID year, changing the development for certain players and whatnot in the portal and NIL, you know, coming into these past couple of seasons. It is something that I think about quite a bit, honestly. But yeah, I think CJ Daniels is going to be a great player, and I don't think there's going to be any redshirting. But like I said, it is really, really, really hard to play wide receiver at LSU. Okay. Jack Besh is one of the best true freshman pass catchers in LSU history. Hard to play at LSU. It's really, really, really hard. One more thing on Malik Nabers is his first year at LSU. Obviously, that season for him started hurt, and the wide receiver room was so deep. But I had gotten word that right when he got there, he was already dominating practices. And this was a guy who really couldn't play football his senior year outside of like 7-on-7 stuff. He is so special. It blows my mind how good he is at football. Blows my mind. And that's why if I was legitimately job on the line as a GM and Jerry Jones came to me or Howie Roseman or whatever, and he said that those guys said, hey, I need you to tell me your job is on the line. Pick a wide receiver, Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers. I will tell Malik Nabers. I would. Now, one more thing on the draft. Brian Thomas Jr. is shot up. Okay. His hype has gone up. That concerns me just a bit. It really, really, really does. But BTJ is getting gassed up by the national media right now. He is getting some serious love from people that have no ties to LSU. Greg Rosenthal says, tweeted out today, there's not a pick too high that you could select Brian Thomas Jr. this year. That is how highly he thinks of him. That is how highly he thinks of him. Yeah, there were a few pause situations. I was wondering if one of y'all were going to catch it. And there you go. Chris Sims has Nabers and BTJ number one and number two for his wide receiver rankings. Man, I'm telling you. The national media loves him, some LSU receivers. I've been shocked at how many national media members have moved Malik Nabers over Marvin Harrison. BTJ, though, as high as they are on him, I kind of hate it for Brian Thomas Jr. that he's been gassed up this much because he would have been the perfect fit for like the Bills in the back half of the first round or the Chiefs in the back half of the first round, where you're going with Hall of Fame, can't miss quarterbacks, where it would be near impossible for him to fail. But I would have rathered him
gone in that range instead of now getting gassed up first half of the first round,
and you got to go to the Jets or something like that. That's a tough spot. That's a tough spot. I also think the Jets are seriously considering Brock Bowers. That just shows you how much I'm in the NFL draft mode right now. Now, we'll take a few more here. Once again, a few super chat. We'll keep the party moving. Okay, here's Blanche. Yeah, well, you did just super chat. I didn't want to get in. I was going to let this one slide because it's just, it's good content fodder, but I was like, it's just so hacky to do the, they're sleeping on Brian Kelly. They didn't put him in the top 10. It is what it is at this point. If you don't think Brian Kelly is a top 10 coach in college football, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I don't think last year was his best coaching job, but I think he still did a fine job. He won 10 games. And then obviously the year before was top two or three coaching job you'll ever see at LSU. Winning the SEC West with the first year roster and so on and so on. Brian Kelly's an elite football coach. He is a person who is not rigid. He is open to change. He is open to new ideas. He is open to getting younger in coaching staffs. He's open to analytics. And he is a very aggressive fourth down decision maker, which is what I like from my coaches. All right. Brian Kelly's a top 10 coach in college football. He's already in the College Football Hall of Fame. And it's interesting that Nick Saban leaves, Jim Harbaugh leaves. So two guys that you could legitimately put, well, Saban is ahead of Kelly, but Jim Harbaugh you could put ahead of Brian Kelly. They left, and you still don't have Brian Kelly in your top 10.
Okay. You still don't. I never looked at the list,
to be honest. I did see it. I did have a few of you text me, hey, did you see ESPN? I wasn't ever going to bring it up, but Blanche super chatted, and it is what it is.
I also think the national media still doesn't like BK. I
that's honestly one of those national media things, which is kind of interesting because he is relatively open with the national media when it comes to access, especially when he first got there. So there you go. Kalen DeBoer named number two. I actually do think Kalen DeBoer is special. He would probably be. Oh, he would definitely be in my top 10. He would probably be in my top 5. But I will tell you, I won't get into that story. But still, he's a very good play caller and a very good coach. It is going to be interesting to see Alabama without Ryan Grubb. So we'll see what this coaching staff is able to do. Now,
I appreciate each and every one of you.
Top super chatter of the day was Blanche along with Jordan via Venmo. I appreciate each and every one of you.
Okay.
So, there you go.
As Power Hour, LSU Bill, back tomorrow night. And tonight, oh, we're doing pork chops, baby. Let's freaking go.
I love pork chop night. Let's go. Let's go.